Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, about how many Jews live in Morocco today? Aviad Moreno is a member of the Jewish History Department at Tel Aviv University. He's done extensive research on Jews in the Middle East and North Africa, primarily Morocco. He's just published a book, Europe from Morocco, The Minutes of the Leadership of Tangier's Jewish Community, the Junta, 1860 to 1864. Which examines the Jewish community in Tangier against the backdrop of the growing European presence in the city. Moreno discusses how the local junta came to play an active role in developing a pro-European discourse that promoted European intervention in the community, which enabled European modernization to emerge as they shaped the image of Europe on Moroccan soil. Moreno spoke with us about the history of the Jewish community in Morocco and his new book.
Thank you very much for speaking with us today, Aviad. Could you first tell us a little bit about the history of the Moroccan Jewish community?
Well, generally speaking, we can speak about four periods of conquest and settlement, that have shaped Moroccan Jewry over the years. I'm speaking about the area of what is modern-day Morocco. We can speak about the first mythological settlement of Jews in the area since biblical time. We're speaking about the era of King David and Solomon some 3,000 years ago. According to some accounts, the Phoenicians incorporated Israeli traders from what is modern-day Israel into their trade routes. And this is how the Jews reached Morocco in the first place. The Phoenicians actually were the Mediterranean Empire of traders that actually dominated the routes of the Mediterranean about the 5th century BC. Well, but this is actually mythology, I would say. Much clearer is the settlement of Jews in Mauritania during the Roman conquest of the Mediterranean. This is the 1st century BC, and we know that many Jewish newcomers were first what we would call today labor migrants, I would say. They engaged in the development of agriculture and trade that the Roman actually encouraged very much in North Africa. We can also speak about refugees who fled the Jewish Judeo-Roman War that led to the destruction of the Temple of Jerusalem in the first century. Perhaps the most influential shift, I think, took place in the 7th century with the Arab-Muslim conquest. This is when the ancient inhabitants of Morocco became Arabic-speaking Jews. I would say that the next historical shift we know very well took place in the 15th century. And this is the last stage of the Reconquista, the reconquest of the Iberian Peninsula from the Muslims. And after the expulsion of Jews from Spain, along with Muslims, obviously, these Jews brought with them into Morocco, what is Moroccan today, new rituals and also Judeo-Spanish language. I should say that by the 17th century, there were no reminders of the Judeo-Spanish language in Morocco. It could be felt only in northern Morocco. This is the area we are focusing on. Jews there in northern Morocco, like other parts of Morocco, spoke Hakitia, which is the Western Ladino. That is the Ladino that comprises of many local Berber Arabic words, unlike the Turkish word that, the Western Ladino, the Eastern Ladino borrowed in Turkey and the Balkans and other places. The last period that I would say that actually influenced very much Moroccan Jewry were the modern period, more in the period of European colonialism during the 19th and 20th century. This is when many local Jews transformed the focus of the high culture, let's say, onto the European sphere. It became very Europeanized. Many, not everybody, but a sector in Moroccan society became very Europeanized in their education, language, dwelling codes, and professions, and et cetera, and so on. This is also a time, and this is actually, I think it leads that to our book, to my book, this was a time of growing philanthropic missions and modernization projects undertaken by European Jews on behalf of Moroccan Jews. For instance, we have this great example of the Alliance Israelite Universelle Network. This is the French schooling system that, well, they declared they wanted to advance the Jews of Morocco and Mediterranean countries through French education and bringing them the French culture. And it's interesting that the first Alliance branches in the world were opened in Tetouan, which is in the vicinity of Tangier. It was opened in 1962 and then in Tangier. 1864.
Well, you can still, I think you can still see a very strong influence of the French culture among the Moroccan Jews who left Morocco.
Sure. Well, you can still see that, it's something that they brought with them, the new diasporas. But there is a process behind it. I mean, we have to actually capture the moment, the historically momentous historical period when this process took shape. I think my book, if we go to my book, actually, I think this is, we'll be able to better understand this shift that took shape back in the 19th century. If we speak about my book, actually, you know, my book is entitled Europe from Morocco. This is something that goes back to the very central place and time when European influence actually, was very influential in Morocco. My study actually is based on the minute book of the junta, the Jewish community leadership of the city, and I think that if we understand what the junta is, we understand quite a lot about the way this process took shape.
Tell us about the junta.
Sure. Well, the junta was the modern community council of Tangier, and its founding members, 10 of them, and came from the wealthiest families of Tangier. We are talking about, let's say, for example, Moshe Pariente. He was the junta's first vice president, and he was famous for founding the first bank in Morocco in 1840, for example. We have many of the juntas, let's say 9 out of 10, which were active employees of the diplomatic corps of Tangier, also commercial houses. So, you know, it's no wonder that this local leadership promoted a few of the very central European projects and came into Morocco. For instance, what I just mentioned about the Alliance State and Brazil project, which opened its first branches in the world in Tangier and Tetouan. Well, we're speaking about the junta, but we also have to understand the junta's book. It's a very rare document that was written by the junta this very momentous historical period, in beginning in the 1860s. Actually, in the year 1860 until 1875. This is the first minute book of a series. And this documented the entries of the junta regarding past and present activities. The junta actually outlined the need for this minute book in order to maintain order and authority over the community. So they actually omitted elements that were seen as inappropriate for documentation or emphasized other elements that were seen very beneficial for promoting the political goal. And this document, I'll tell you a little about how it was found later, but actually it provides some insight into the first modernization project, because it does so from the point of view of some of the local agents in Morocco. I'll tell you what I found my conclusion reading this book. Let me just cite the first paragraph of the book, which is amazing to me. I mean, it starts with, this is an English translation obviously, having got the affairs of this community neglected, and since we are desiring to adopt and imitate the good conditions of the communities of our brethren of Europe, the notables of this community have been invited to form a junta. This is how the minute book of the junta is opened. So we know the junta actually declared it wanted to establish itself by importing and adopting European standards of living.
What language was it originally written in?
It was originally Jaquetia, but it was written in wannabe Spanish Jaquetia. They actually, wrote this book in order to maintain order, and this is why they actually tried to follow what they learned and picked up in the commercial houses, perhaps, or in the diplomatic corps. So this is why this is a very enlightening source in that terms, I think.
I would like you to tell us about the new things that you've discovered and also about the mass emigration in the mid-20th century and where these people went.
Sure. Okay, so just briefly about my book. I think that if we speak about my book and the main, let's say, conclusion, I think that, we have this grand narrative concerning modernity among Oriental Jews. The first is, if generally speaking about two big narratives, One speaks about a very positive process of benevolent European intervention. And according to this account, we have important models of European modernity that are very essential for breaking the traditional cachet of backwards Jews in the Orient. And the second one is something that actually highlights the darker side of European intervention. And this is actually something that says that European powers manipulated the poor societies of Morocco and other Jewry. So this society actually, societies reacted with resistance. This is obvious. If we go back to my book, we see that at first sight, the junta actually clearly supports the first narrative about the need for importing European models in order to modernize Morocco. And it actually contradicts the notion that were imposed in Morocco from the other side. And I asked to my book if this is really what we can retrieve. It is the only thing we can retrieve from reading this document. Because through the minutes of the junta, I saw that firstly, the reason for using this very Europhilic language, adapting and imitating the developed communities of Europe, it was actually initially designed for internal purposes within the junta. It was the way the junta actually wanted to represent itself and show to other communities in Morocco there were actually crucial leadership bodies that actually can mediate, bring Europe to Morocco. And then, this is an evolution. We have to understand that this is an evolving process. European bodies actually responded, reacted to this, because they read what these people from the junta wrote to them, and this is actually something that came back to the junta and fed this ongoing notion about the way Europe should be perceived. And let's go to the, just ask me about immigration process.
Yes, please.
And eventually left. Today we know that there are only a few thousand Jewish inhabitants remaining in Morocco.
Can you tell us when they left Morocco and why and where they went?
Okay. Broadly speaking, we speak about the mid-20th century. And the question about why they left, I think this is the million-dollar question, Linda, because we have many narratives about it. It actually tried to grasp different parts of history. They left Morocco in the mid-20th century when actually with the rise of nationalism in the region, Zionism with the founding of the State of Israel, obviously, and then the Arab nationalist movement, which includes the Morocco's statehood, independence in 1956. And this period of time and the way scholars wrote about it will encompass several narratives, as I said. The first one is the Zionist narrative that we know quite well, which emphasized the collective attraction of Jews to Israel. This is what you hear from many Moroccan Jews living in Israel today, and you heard it much more during the 70s and before the 70s, before the revolution was speak about. This narrative actually promoted the concept of the negation of exile. Jews lived in an Arab country, any country which is not Israel, according to this ethos, were supposed to negate their exilic reminders, but if they lived in our country, well, obviously they had to negate their connection to exile. I mean, we're talking about a double paradox. First it was exile, and then it was an exile that was an enemy of Israel. So this is the Zionist narrative. We can speak about another narrative, about another story, why Jews left Morocco, and I would call it the alienation narrative, because it actually maintained that Jews in Morocco became alienated from local movement societies after Morocco's independence. We're speaking about, a process of modernization and the way Jews were had to break away from the pariah status, and then the Muslim regime, the pan-Arab nationalist movement, actually resulted in the worsening of their standards of living. This is why Jews left Morocco, because they didn't feel related to their new nation state. So this is a different explanation. We have another explanation, which is very common, became very central since the 80s and still very central today. And this is the post-colonial, the Mizrahi story, that actually denounced the Zionist and the alienation thesis. And according to this account, this scholars depicted the Jews from our countries as actually, as we know in here today, as victims of Zionism. They helped actually the, you know, Ashkenazi-dominated Zionists and they were responsible for imposing foreign concepts of Zionism. So why did they leave, actually? Well, because they were driven out of Morocco by Zionist emissaries and Saad and all these movements. So we're probably speaking about, in simple words, Mizrahi Jews that were actually tricked by European Jews. And this is why the assimilation into Israeli society was so difficult, and we hear it over and over again in Israel. But let me just say one concluding sentence, if I may. I mean, that in my opinion, these narratives miss some essential parts of history. I'm working on northern Morocco, as I said, and in the history of northern Morocco, actually challenges these narratives very much. Just for one example, we're speaking about an immigration process that started mid-20th century with the rise of nationalism. Now we go to Morocco and we know that the Alliance graduated. These people that graduated the Alliance in Tetouan and in Tangier in northern Morocco, where the junta and all other European bodies took shape, actually emigrated in a mass immigration to Brazil and the Amazon. This took shape, this process took shape in the mid-19th century. Mm. And we had, still have, emigrate communities that serve as, let's say, a substitute to the Aliyah, even among Zionist activists. Well, let me just say one sentence about my own family. My grandfather, actually, he was a Zionist activist in Tangier, but he left to Venezuela because this is where... Yeah, first of all, family, but also a very well-developed Zionist infrastructure, I would say.
So in summary, then, there are Moroccan Jews in South America, in Israel. We know that there are quite a number here in Spain and also in France.
Sure. Well, if we speak about Moroccan Jews specifically, I think that the majority of them are in Israel today. We have to speak about the last number I heard is a million descendants of Moroccan origin in Israel. And yeah, mostly we have the second largest group is in France and then in Canada. And among this group of Spanish Moroccans from the area where I focus on is in Venezuela and Latin America. Yeah, these are smaller numbers. We're speaking about 10,000, not more than that. I mean, so this is the story today. And this is why, and obviously, Morocco doesn't have any more Jewish inhabitants, only a few thousand, as I said, but these communities are still living today and still developing, and we have revival all over. So it's not really the end of the story, I would say.
Okay, well, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. Maybe we can pick up the rest of the story some other time.
Okay, Linda.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. It was nice talking to you.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you, so please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSefarad.com. See you next week.